Welcome to the Quilt Fiction Story Guild podcast, a podcast exclusively for members of the Quilt Fiction Story Guild. I'm Frances O'Rourke Dow, and we're reading my work-in-progress friendship album, 1934. Thank you for joining us, and as always, thank you for being part of the Quilt Fiction community. Now, on to the story.
Chapter 7. It must be nice to live in such luxury, the young woman said as she took a cup of coffee from Bess. She looked around the living room. Your late husband must have been quite the earner. Bess took a seat across from the couch, where the woman sat next to her father. I don't think I've ever thought of myself as living in luxury, although I was always grateful for what Bill provided for us. The young woman shrugged. Back when Jim and I got married, I had dreams of a house like this, but then the market crashed and... She paused a moment before continuing. And then, of course, we never had much luck starting a family either. Oh, well, it doesn't matter. We're lucky to have a home at all. Isn't that right, Dad? At least that's what you always say.
All things in good time, Teresa. Joe took his daughter's hand. You and Jim have each other, and you've made a lovely home. And now that Jim's working again, everything will get back on track soon enough.
Teresa shrugged. I suppose, but making a home for two seems so awfully, I don't know. There's not much to it.
I remember how it felt a bit like playing house when Bill and I were first married, Bess said. Although, to be honest, I wasn't quite sure how to keep a house. My mother had servants who did most of the work, and she's never been what I would call domestically inclined, so I didn't learn very much from her in that regard.
Teresa gave her a curious look. I thought your father was a minister. My mother never had household help. Most ministers' wives don't, in my experience.
I suppose not. Bess agreed, but my mother had her own money. Her father sent her a monthly allowance, which allowed her to continue living in the manner she'd been accustomed to.
The expression that played around Teresa's mouth wasn't exactly a smirk, but it was close. Bess glanced at Joe, who gave her a sympathetic smile and a shrug, as if to remind her, I warned you, didn't I? It was true, he had. The first time Teresa's disposition had come up, Bess and Joe had been in St. Luke's back office, where Bess was taking a break from the tedium of going through boxes of ancient church files. Mrs. Porter, the church secretary, had the day off, and so Bess and Joe were free to chat without worry of being overheard. Somehow their conversation turned to Helen and her social set. One girl was rumored to have been flirting with another girl's sweetheart, and Helen had managed to get herself in the middle of all the drama, though she was neither the trespasser nor the trespassed against. When Bess had suggested to her daughter that she stay out of things, Helen's reaction was nothing less than volcanic. I know she has a dramatic nature, Bess had complained to Joe, but I find it exhausting. What's worse is that I feel like I spend half my time attending to Helen while poor Jane is forced to escape to her room so she can read in peace.
Joe had smiled sympathetically. One day you'll meet my daughter Teresa, who has her own form of unpleasantness, although I'm not sure that unpleasant describes Helen. The few times I've met her, I've found her to be charming and lively. Teresa, I fear, lacks charm. She was always a bit dour, and then when Phyllis passed away, something in her seemed to sour. Permanently, I fear.
How old was she when your wife died?
Joe did a quick calculation on his fingers. It's been 6 years, so Teresa would have been 18, just finishing up high school and thinking about going to the normal school in Bowling Green to become a teacher. She and Jim were engaged to be married by then, but Jim wanted to finish college first. After Phil died, Teresa dropped her plans for teaching and took over her mother's job in the rectory. She had teas and ran the various women's groups. It was actually quite a lot of work, though unpaid as that work tends to be.
I imagine she was terribly busy, Bess said, remembering her mother's constant activity as a rector's wife. Did she continue to help after she and Jim were married?
Not to the same extent. Naturally, once Teresa was married, she wanted to devote time to setting up housekeeping. Then the stock market crashed and Jim was out of a job like so many others. Teresa asked me to hire her in some capacity, perhaps even to fire the church secretary so Teresa could take her position. Of course, I could never do that. It would have been terribly unfair. But there were other reasons not to give Teresa a job in the church. Even in difficult times, especially in difficult times, really, clergy and church staff need to present a joyful countenance to the world. We need to remind those who suffer that God's love will sustain us if we let it. Unfortunately, at that juncture in time, Teresa's countenance mostly suggested that God had let her down terribly.
Poor thing, Bess commiserated. First, the loss of her mother, and then to have her husband lose his job right after they were married. That's a lot for one person to bear.
Joe's eyes flashed, an unusual show of temper from the normally placid priest.
Yes, but others bore it. Her older sister and brother also lost their mother and also faced financial difficulties after the market crashed. They bore it all, with great sadness, yes, but also with grace. Their suffering made them more sympathetic to others who had experienced great losses. Teresa simply became more convinced that she was the most aggrieved and put upon person who ever lived.
Oh, Joe, it can't be that bad, Bess insisted. Perhaps as her father, you're more critical of her.
Maybe, Joe said, sighing. I do wonder if I feel ashamed of her and if I am ashamed of my shame.
Bess smiled gently. It sounds as though you have a tangled web on your hands.
Perhaps you'll help me untangle it, Joe suggested. In response, Bess reached for a file and got back to work.
While they'd recently admitted to one another that theirs was more than a simple friendship, Bess was still easing into the idea of a romance. Now, 3 months later, the January light already beginning to dim in mid-afternoon, Bess was more comfortable with thinking of Joe as her beau. Joe's daughter, on the other hand, didn't appear eager to welcome Bess into her father's life, or her own.
It seems to me that your experience growing up in a rectory was far from typical, Teresa said, taking a sip of coffee. She took another sip and wrinkled her nose.
Is the coffee not to your liking? Bess asked. She gestured toward the highboard. There's cream and sugar if you'd like.
No, no, the coffee is fine, Teresa assured her. Is it from the first pot you brewed in the morning?
Bess looked at Joe and was once again met with a shrug. No, dear, I put the coffee on only moments before you arrived.
That reminds me.
Teresa leaned forward and gave Bess a sympathetic look. Father tells me your housekeeper just quit. Such a shame. Although, how nice for you that you could afford a housekeeper. Joe gently patted his daughter's shoulder. That's enough, Teresa.
But it is nice, Teresa insisted, shrugging off her father's hand.
I'm just stating a fact. Most people can't afford servants, given the times.
Bess steadied herself. She would not react. She would not give voice to any of the unkind, though not unmerited, thoughts that were occurring to her. She would not.
Why, hello there. I hope I'm not interrupting.
Edwina entered the room, her coat still on, cheeks rosy, a bouquet of rosemary branches in her hand.
I thought I'd be out all afternoon at my Ladies' Aid Society meeting, but the room was so stuffy that I decided to leave early. As soon as I got home, the spirit moved me to go around back to view the remains of Jane's summer garden. Lo and behold, I came across a rosemary bush in the far corner.
Oh, my goodness, I'd forgotten about it myself.
Bess turned to Teresa and Joe. Among other things, my middle girl, Jane, is a horticulturist and a lover of Shakespeare. A few summers ago, she decided to plant a special garden in honor of Hamlet, which she was reading at the time.
There's rosemary, that's for remembrance, Edwina recited. Pray you, love, remember. And there's pansies, that's for thoughts.
Such a beautiful passage. Poor, dear Ophelia. She turned toward their guest.
You must be Teresa. How is your trip up from Cincinnati? Let me hang up my coat, and then I want you to tell me everything. Did you make that dress? It's lovely.
It seemed to Bess that whatever malaise that had only moments before filled the room had suddenly dissipated, replaced by Edwina's bright enthusiasm. For the first time since she'd arrived, Teresa's smile seemed genuine. She stood and nodded at Bess.
You know, I believe I will put some sugar in my coffee.
Shall I bring in the cake from the kitchen?
Edwina called from the foyer, where she was hanging her coat on the tree-like rack that had been one of her additions to the household.
I made it this morning, a lemon pound cake.
Teresa seemed to forget the sugar and instead trailed Edwina's voice to the hall.
Wherever did you get lemons this time of year?
Extract, my dear, came Edwina's reply. Come, help me cut the cake and I'll show you.
Blessings upon that woman's head, Joe said sotto voce. Only Edwina could change the mood of a room that way.
Bess nodded. It was true. In the time that Edwina had been living with Bess and her daughters, her presence had so often been a balm. If only Dorothy had felt the same way about the older woman, she thought with a small sigh.
You're thinking about Dorothy, aren't you? Joe leaned forward. I can always tell when you are. A look of such sadness washes over your face.
Another nod. Bess couldn't bring herself to respond, although Joe had been the first person she'd told.
The first one to offer consolation.
The first one to understand that she had a broken heart. Dorothy had come into work as always that day, 2 weeks ago, but she'd waited until Edwina had left to go to a bridge club to talk to Bess. It was a Tuesday, and Bess would be hosting the Wednesday Bee the following morning. That's what she thought Dorothy wanted to talk about when she called Bess into the kitchen. Should they serve pie or cake? What might be a good discussion topic? Should they feel the need for one? Edwina suggested this morning that if you liked, she could take over as hostess when the bee meets here, now that you've begun to host at your place, Bess had said as she entered the room. She's awfully good at baking cakes and pies, though not quite up to the standard that you and Eula have set.
Well, that chocolate silk pie she made last week was delicious, Dorothy said. I've thought about it several times.
I'm sure she'll write the recipe down for you if you ask. Speaking of writing things down, let me get my notepad in case we need to make a grocery list.
That's not what I wanted to talk to you about.
Dorothy placed her hands on the edge of the table, as though steadying herself.
Why don't you have a seat?
Bess nodded mutely and sat down.
Well then, what do you want to talk to me about?
I want to talk about how you don't need my housekeeping services anymore, Dorothy began, and then held up a hand when Bess began to protest.
No, no, hear me out, Bess. The fact is, Edwina does most of my work these days. I'd stop her if I could, but she can't seem to help herself. I understand. Everybody wants to feel useful. Everyone wants to make a contribution to the household. But Edwina contributes so much that there's not much left for me to do. I can't take a paycheck when I haven't earned it. I think it's time for me to move on.
Bess couldn't think of what to say. Dorothy had been with her from the time the girls were little. Helen had been barely 7 the summer she'd started, and Annie had just turned 11. 1925, so 9 years in August.
Bess and Dorothy had always had a good working relationship, and after Bill died, a true friendship had rooted and then blossomed. Now, it appeared, it was about to wither on the vine. "I can talk to Edwina," she finally replied. "I know she has an enormous amount of energy, especially for a woman her age, but it can be diverted into other projects. Just this morning she said she might join a second bridge club. She enjoys her Tuesday group so much." Dorothy shook her head. "I'm afraid we'll never find the right balance. Three women in one house, a house where the children are mostly grown. It's too many and too much. And truth be told, Bess, I'm getting old. I wake up and have to shake every one of my bones loose before I can even get out of bed. I've started to think my housekeeping days might be behind me." "But can you afford?" Dorothy finished Bess's question for her. "To stop working? No, but there are other kinds of work to do. Florence might have a place for me at the quilting company." "Doing what?" Bess shook her head. "I can't imagine you sitting at a machine all day."
"I can't either. But Eula told me that she and Florence have been discussing some new plans for building number 5. Plans I might be able to help with."
Dorothy clearly had no intention about going into more detail about these plans, so Bess didn't push. She batted away the thought that somehow Florence and Eula had betrayed her or turned Dorothy against her. More likely, it had been Dorothy who had instigated things, who had asked Florence about any open positions she might have. Still, Dorothy's leaving felt like a blow.
"I'll finish out the week here," Dorothy continued. "We can tell everyone tomorrow at the B. Florence says that I can always have Wednesday mornings off."
"I feel like I'm the last person to know about this," Bess said, and she could hear the hurt in her own voice. "Why do I think I should have been the first?"
"It used to be that you would have," Dorothy admitted, "but all sorts of things have changed over the last few months. They've been changes for the good, mostly. You and Joe getting so close, and Edwina moving in. But one change always leads to other, unexpected changes."
Dorothy paused as she rose from the table, and when she spoke again, it was as though nothing had changed at all.
"Now, I best mop the floors before Edwina gets home and takes a mind to do all the mopping herself."
This was offered in all good humor, but Bess could sense the frustration underneath Dorothy's words. Oh, why hadn't Bess seen this coming? How had she been foolish enough to think they were all getting along so well, that theirs was a happy household? Because that's what she'd so badly wanted to believe, and here she was, 2 weeks later, still smarting from that conversation, still feeling abandoned, which she knew was silly and dramatic. Perhaps she was more like Helen than Bess wanted to admit. "Forgive me for saying this," Joe said, lowering his voice as Edwina called out that they were on their way. "But it was time for Dorothy to go. She simply realized it before you did."
"So why do I feel like someone died?" Bess said, her voice catching. "Even though I've seen Dorothy twice since her last day."
"Dorothy's leaving is a kind of death," Joe suggested. "But something new will grow out of it. A new kind of friendship for the two of you."
Bess shook her head. "It won't be the same."
Joe smiled sadly. "No, it won't. It already wasn't the same. And when Jane goes to college in the fall, it will be different still."
"Who's ready for cake?" Edwina called as she walked into the room with a platter in her hands, Teresa following behind with forks and plates.
"I believe Bess is ready for the biggest slice of cake you can cut," Joe told her. "Bigger, even."
Oh, to be a child, when the promise of cake was enough to lift your spirits, Bess thought as she stood to get more coffee. But she wasn't a child, and Dorothy's leaving was a great loss. Not her first great loss, but a grievous one, all the same.
Thanks for joining us on the Quilt Fiction Story Guild podcast. We're reading Friendship Album 1934, a novel by Frances O'Rourke Dow, a production of Milton Falls Media, Incorporated. Copyright 2022, all rights reserved. Until next time, this is Frances O'Rourke Dow. Thank you for joining us.